Dramedy Podcast. Coming at you through the help of technological advancement, know-how nobody has ever seen or known. Until now. How's everybody doing? It's Kenneth Allen. And it's another exciting episode. Boy, this one is going to blow your doors off. Or it's going to cut them off with hydraulic tools. One or the other. And it's very special. I'll tell you why this is a special episode. We as caregivers, especially in the pre-hospital setting, be it firefighters, EMTs, and paramedics, rarely get the opportunity to find out what happened to our patient. You see, we show up, they're sick, or they're injured, or they're both, and we do our best to stabilize them before we send them off to the hospital for surgeries and more medications and treatments. And we hope for the best. We've done everything we can. We send them off with good prayers, good tidings, and hopefully good treatment. But we never get to hear that tale as to what happened after the surgeries when they go home and they begin the long, difficult road to recovery. Well, tonight on the podcast, we have that opportunity. I interviewed Amy Monahan, who was a survivor of a high-speed freeway accident that I and several other engine and truck companies responded to back in July of this year. Amy's car flipped at high speeds in excess of 5 times. Not rolled, but flipped end over end across the freeway and landed in a ditch. And she was stuck in the car for an extended period of time as we had to take the hydraulic equipment, the jaws of life, as many of you know it, and extricate her by cutting her out piece by piece and slowly, the car, I mean, not her, thankfully, and immobilize her onto a backboard and ship her off to the hospital. She came by the station a month ago just to thank us for a job well done. And I can't tell you how meaningful that is to us. We do this job all the time, and people say thanks here and there, but they never really take the opportunity, like Amy did, to come in and say personally that she appreciated what we did for her. I was sincerely touched, and of course, I asked her if she would mind coming on the podcast and talking about her accident, what she remembered, what happened when she got to the hospital, the surgeries that are involved in her recuperation, and the physical and psychological endeavors she's been going through in order to get back onto her feet again, literally, and collect her life and begin new. And she was brave enough and kind enough to say, of course I'll come in and talk to you. It sounds like a great plan. I think throughout this interview, you're going to hear her positive spirit and know just what an incredible person Amy is. I just want to thank her from the bottom of my heart again that she came in and spoke to the crews and, of course, that she came on the podcast. Also, I wanted to thank the engine and truck companies that showed up on that call. In Engine 27, it was Victor Velasquez, Paul Stamm, Florin Floria, and Medic Brandon Corr. Truck 35, Captain Dave Ennis, Keith Wiesty, Jeff Seaton, Cesar Tarango, and Glenn Thompson. And of course, Engine 18, Captain Rick Palmer, Todd Ashbaugh, Anthony Dixon, and Mike Hidalgo, who's been on the podcast before and really made the definitive care and treatment decisions on her that saved her life and also saved her ability to walk. And on Squad 18 with myself was Tom Reed. Overseeing it all was Chief Don Alexander. I just want to commend you all for an incredibly professional, operated procedure, and she's walking today because of you. You know, there's this kind of attitude that we adopt when we're on scene. It's not like Chicago Fire or Rescue Me or Trauma. Remember that show? There's none of this screaming that's going on. You will not go in there and do this. I have to save it. Like that whole, I don't know where that comes from. But honestly, if you were a patient and you were struggling in pain to get out of a car that you were wrapped up inside like a sardine can, how confident would you feel in a crew that's screaming and shouting behind you? It's absolutely the most unreassuring way to conduct yourself. And there's just this feeling, if you listen to these to the crews, that we how we reacted to each other and how we speak to each other, it's completely the opposite. There's this calm, collective confidence in decision making, a precision of speaking that is so reassuring, I believe, for the patient and for us, because we know it's stressful. We don't have to have shouting and screaming. That's excessive. It would go crazy. I'd be shouting right back. I remember walking up and hearing Captain Ennis say, "Ken, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to cut posts A, B, and then we're going to roll it right back. So why don't you go ahead and get in position, and we're going to begin." In that calm way. As I'm walking up, Seaton says, "Hey, Kenny, how you doing?" I mean, "Very well. Good to see you, Jeff. Okay, we're going to start now. If you wouldn't mind throwing that trauma tarp over her, we're going to go ahead and cut her out." Great. It's this overt politeness that's not in any way condescending, but it's this show of control, of poise, that when you look back on that call, you think, damn, these guys know what they're doing. They're not rattled. They don't raise their voice. They speak in concise sentences and tell you exactly what they're going to do. And then they do it. And it's truly a feeling of pride that I speak about tonight, that I get to, a chance to work with these guys. They're heroes. And they're competent, incredible heroes that do their job in such a way that you can't help but marvel. It's exactly what you expect in an emergency caregiver. It's what you want. It's what you hope for when you are losing it, when you are sick and hurt and having the worst day of your life, quite possibly. That and, of course, you know, big, strapping, good-looking dudes that show up and, you know, can haul shit around for you. And we got that, too, which is nice. So, without any further ado, I want to just say thanks again for listening. We're coming up on the year-end podcast, and this is a full year of the Traumedy podcast. It has been a pleasure. It has been an inspiration. It has been such an outlet for me, and it has been such a great feeling to know that you're out there and you're listening and that you care and that you're spreading it to your friends and your family and other people in the EMS field, and people that even aren't in the field. That's really nice to know. It's also nice to complete something that you've been working forward to. You can't get that kind of satisfaction when someone gives it to you. You can't get it through buying it. You can't get it by ingesting anything. When you set your heart towards something in your mind and you accomplish that, that's an undeniable satisfaction. It's something that I will continue to do as long as you keep listening. And hopefully, you're doing it too. You're the fantastic fan base that I will always love and respect. And I wanted to also say thank you again to Amy, because you inspired me to be upbeat and continue doing this. Without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Amy Monahan.
Traumatic event that occurred on July 26th of this year, and we're lucky enough to have her come to the podcast and interview, and she is really a success story to emergency care. Engine 18, Truck 35, Squad 18 and Engine 27 were the arriving units and the people that treated her. I was one of the medics that was on scene that helped Amy out. And it's just nice to have her come onto the podcast.
Thank you, Ken. It's nice to be here.
You're doing okay?
Yes.
So, Amy, I wanted to first, if you could remember the event, tell me what you remember from the event.
Well,
so lay it out for me.
So, 8 o'clock in the morning, my husband gets me out of bed and is having kidney stone pain. Mm-hmm. And it was get in the car, get to the hospital as quickly as we can. And we got to about Highway 85, North 101, just before Highway 85 exit. I blacked out, fainted, basically, behind the wheel of my car. I was in the diamond lane, and from the witness's account, I hit the center divide and cut right all the way across for all the lanes of traffic, four lanes, hit the drainage ditch and launched our car about 30 feet in the air. We nosed into the side of the hill on the side of the freeway and continued to roll our car end over end 5 times.
Okay. End over end, not rolling normally, but flipping.
Flipping, yes.
Okay.
Flipping.
Flipping, not rolling.
End over end. I was not conscious.
Engine 18, fire alarm. Is the park at Coffee
Field? Of course. We're back.
Yeah, so I think I was about to say.
So the last thing you remember is just driving down the freeway.
I do. The last thing I remember was rolling down my window because I wasn't feeling very good. I remember getting really hot and everything started sounding really far away. The radio started sounding like I couldn't hear it.
Right.
And then I remember thinking, God, I feel like I'm going to faint, but not while I'm driving. So I remember thinking that very clearly. And then I rolled down my window and that's the last I remember until I woke up after we rolled. I woke up shortly after and I was looking at the dirt. The first thing I remember feeling was not being really able to breathe very well. I had ended up breaking my nose in 3 places and there was a lot of blood. I actually remember asking, I don't know who I asked, but I asked somebody for a Kleenex so I could blow my nose because it was hard to breathe. So that's it. But at the same time, I remember feeling my back right away too. And the pain from my back. And my husband said that I had unbuckled myself. I wanted to get out of the car. And he saw me unbuckle my seatbelt. And, the witnesses were telling me to stay in the car. And
so you were moving around.
I was moving around a lot, yeah. I was really uncomfortable, really in a lot of pain.
Right. So, and that was when we showed up. And so it took 20 minutes just to cut you out initially. The car was on the side. You were driving.
Yeah.
You were down.
Yeah. Remember you guys putting the cover over me, that you guys were going to...
The tarp while we were cutting, right?
So yeah, and you broke the windshield. I remember someone putting the collar on me and just explaining everything. I mean, I remember pretty clear somebody or people, multiple people explaining everything that was being done.
Mm-hmm.
Don't move to, we're going to put the collar on you, we're going to get the... We're going to get the board ready to put you on. Just everything was being explained to me. I wanted out of the car. That was for sure. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it took forever.
Well, it's one of those situations where we do it all the time and it's just prophylactic. Well, might as well put C-spine on just in case.
Yeah.
And in your case, when Mike turned to me and said, hey, we have definite instability in her back.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel it.
Yeah.
She's crying in pain, moaning.
Yeah.
it was one of those situations where you say, everybody slow down. In fact, you heard somebody say, everybody stop what you're doing, slow down.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Let's do this for real. And and the thing that's so frustrating is that, or, you know, excruciating for you, is that now we have to move everything incrementally.
Yeah.
Strapping you down slowly and then extricating you from the car. And you were saying, as you're moving, you're saying, just do it. Just, you know, like a Band-Aid, just tear it off. Just get me out.
Exactly. And, you know, it as painful as my back was feeling, I wanted you guys to just pull me out as quickly as you could.
Yeah.
Just to get it over with.
I wish I could. I would have.
I know.
It was a safe way.
But, you know, I understand that you guys do everything for a reason. And, you know, I'm walking and alive and all that because you guys did what you were supposed to, you know, the way you're supposed to.
Yeah. And, I mean, the injury wasn't, we didn't worsen anything.
Exactly.
Is the key to it.
Exactly.
I mean, as severe as it was, it could have been worse, or we could have made it worse.
Yep.
So, I'm glad we didn't. I'm glad we, you know, that's the first rule of care is first do no harm.
Exactly. I remember being on the gurney, and I remember the medics assessing, you know, me and my injuries, and when they were ready to go, I remember the guy in the back with me said, "Hey, dude, we're getting a Code 3 escort. This is awesome." So we got a police escort all the way to the hospital, apparently. So
good. That
made their day.
Right.
You know, at one point I realized that my husband was right next to me at some point, on a gurney next to me in the ER. And there was a lot of police. A lot of police. So,
just to make sure you were okay. You weren't in any trouble.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
I want to clarify that.
Yeah.
No, they were all there for your benefit.
Exactly. A lot of friends.
Good.
So, and I remember, the doctors coming in and, they were really worried about the pain that I was feeling in my leg. In my legs, I guess. I wasn't able to really determine if it was pain or if it was numbness. And so they kept coming back and checking. Every so often they would evaluate the pain and if it was truly pain and if it was getting worse or if it was numbness. So,
Which is, I mean, that's what they're... So what ended up being your injuries? In total,
it was, I broke my nose in 3 places.
It looks great, by the way.
Non-displaced fractures.
No.
Yeah.
Can you tell?
I can, especially with my first cold this winter.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. It was not good.
The inside that's in.
So, it's the inside.
Okay.
Yeah. My back was broken in 2 places. It was my thoracic 10 and 12. And lumbar 1 and 2 were injured. They weren't broken, but they were compromised. And the next day, in the afternoon, they did my surgery. And they put 2 9-inch metal rods in my back. And I think there's 4, so there's 8 bolts in my back to secure it.
Okay. And those are they temporary or are they permanent?
They're permanent. Yeah, I'll always have them. And my spleen. They were concerned about my spleen, and which turned out it was just bruised. It hadn't ruptured or anything, but...
I think the thing that I keep thinking about with this is that everybody lives their life thinking, well, as long as I follow this normal pattern that I have, and I don't do anything adventurous, I'm not risking anything, I drive this road all the time... I'm not irresponsible and, you know, if I have my own little routine, nothing is going to happen to me. You hear about these things happening, but it won't happen to me because I'm taking all of these steps to keep away from it.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you find out not only can it happen, it did happen to you. And I think with any traumatic event, it's just kind of, how does one come to that, come to terms with that realization that it's happened and now what do I do? Or, you know, how was my life after that? Do you remember that event? And like, how did that come to you?
There's part of me that thinks that I haven't really come to that realization yet. I mean, I realize what I went through and I realize what I put my husband through. I think it hit me maybe, or it does hit me every time I look at my kids. I think that's, you know, that's when the sense of reality that life is very fragile and life can change in an instant when I see them. And, you know, going back to when I saw them in the emergency room, I really think that I see it really through my kids. That's when it hits me. And, you know, like I said, I don't know that it's fully hit me yet.
Well, you seem to be handling it. I mean, when you showed up today, you were bouncing basically from over here, upbeat, smiling.
Yeah.
You look great. Yeah. And it could have turned into something much worse than it was.
I mean, and
I think as time goes on, there may be things that hit you and you kind of go, wow.
Yeah. And I think you hit it on the head there where, you know, I saw there was another accident on the freeway the other day, almost at the same place where we crashed. And that was a little eerie for me. That was definitely a wake up call for me, you know, of, wow, you know, this really did happen. And, you know, cause when it first happened, you're kind of in a haze where like, did this really happen? You know, you wake up every morning in the hospital and it's like, wow, I really wasn't an accident. I really am here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's either things my kids say or that accident that we saw that really remind me that it really did happen. And, but I'm dealing with it, you know, the best that I can. And I have to be upbeat for my kids.
Yeah.
And I realize how lucky I am. Mm-hmm. I do realize that. Every day I realize I'm super lucky. I could have had a totally different outcome.
Now, you mentioned like how your kids, you see it through your kids. What do you mean that you see what could have happened? What do you mean by that?
I saw how scared they were when they would come visit me.
Yeah.
I stayed at my mom's for the first month when I got out of the hospital. And I saw the look of that hesitation of wanting to come down into the bedroom that I was in because they didn't know what I was going to be like, you know?
Right.
And, you know, as soon as they saw that I was okay, you know, that, you know, things were going to be okay, that I was, you know, alive, and they wanted to see me get up and walk. Mm-hmm. And as long as I walked more and more every time they came to visit, that was good.
So you see it through their eyes. In other words, I mean, just by judging their emotional, you grow up with your kids, and then it must be that you can see the hesitation in their face.
Yeah.
And like instantly know how they're feeling.
Exactly.
And you got to be strong for them. I mean, for any other person, it's like you have to say, well, I got to get better so that they don't worry.
Exactly. I wanted to lessen their emotional being, I guess.
Yeah, the trauma.
The trauma from them as much as I could.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think not only did it push me to get better quickly, as quickly as I could, but, you know, I needed to get back to a normal routine for them. I did think at times, you know, what it would be like if we hadn't made it through the car accident. You know, what their life would be like, the chaos and the horrible, you know, emotional trauma that would, you know, cause for them. And
you could sit and think about that forever, I would think, but if things are already set up and you already have plans in case that happened, I'm sure that kind of solidifies what you're going to do in case, but thank God it didn't.
Exactly.
It's like,
exactly.
And that's really what you just say, I'm just lucky. I mean, that's what I would say, Mike. Yeah. Instead of having to think about it, it's like, thank God I don't have to think about it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's only natural to think stuff like that, but for me, definitely, you think it and then you move on.
Yeah. Good.
You know.
So. You seem like an incredibly positive person, by the way.
I try to be.
I mean, Thank you. is this like a change, or is this you're always like this?
No, I'm. This is kind of me.
You're crushing it. It's fantastic. I mean, it's totally an inspiration to be this
thank
way.
You.
So thank God you're good. But have there been, what was it like getting behind the wheel of a car?
Was hard.
Yeah.
In fact, I couldn't look at the pictures.
Oh, of your crash?
For a good month.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was really afraid of emotionally collapsing, seeing the pictures and the reality of what we went through. I mean, I was dealing with the reality every day of having, you know, the metal rods put in my back and all that. And it was very emotionally hard to look at the pictures. But my friends and family and, you know, they helped me look at a picture at a time, and it got easier. And I think because I don't remember the accident, I don't remember actually crashing. I think it was easy for me to get behind the wheel. It wasn't as hard. Right. I wouldn't say easy, but it wasn't as hard as what I think I thought it would be and what everybody else thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ready. I mean, by the time I was, in order to come home from my mom's house to my house, I had to drive right past it, the accident. And, you know, by then I was okay. It wasn't as hard as I thought it would be.
It's interesting what ends up being is the things that get you and the things that you think are aren't.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. I think reality set in on me that I needed to get home. I needed to get moving on with my life. I needed to get back into the same old routine.
Right.
And, you know, I think I get that mentality from my mom. My mom is very reality driven, you know. The reality is you got to get back into the groove of things.
Right.
You know, it's just the mind over matter, where I think that helped me, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't affect me as badly as I thought it would.
Because it couldn't.
Exactly. Yeah. It couldn't. I had to get back into the routine of things.
You have to do this. You're doing this for your kids. You've got to be able to drive them to school. And you have to be a mother.
Exactly.
And you have to just get over it.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of that, I mean, I get, and I'm sure the concern is that, are you repressing something? I mean, are people worried? Are you repressing something now? Or is it just, no, I'm not. I just got to get this done.
And I think that does come up, like I said a few minutes ago, that, you know, am I truly dealing with everything?
Right.
But yeah, I think I am. I'm very realistic about things, though. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not. I don't think I'm repressing anything.
Right.
It's just the realistic part of me says life goes on, and I gotta.
It does, right?
You know, well, I gotta move on.
Yeah, and you're moving on.
Yeah, I am.
And as far as your injuries, you have a back brace on.
Yeah.
Locked into this for how long?
About another month and a half.
Good. Okay.
And about another month and a half, I'll see my surgeon again.
Uh-huh.
We'll do another X-ray, make sure everything's healing the way he wants it to heal, and hopefully by then, you know, between now and then, I'm supposed to take it off more and more every day.
Okay, and you can take it off yourself.
So I take it off for, you know, a few hours throughout the day. But I do feel when I take it off, the full weight on the lower part of my back, after a while, it, you know, starts getting sore and a little uncomfortable.
Right.
But I have to build up the muscles and all that back there. So
then have you gone to physical therapy before?
Not yet.
Okay. That's
not yet. I think after I see my surgeon next time, I'll start the BT.
So, I mean, it's just nice that you came in personally and said thank you for what we did. We never get that. And, I mean, that meant so much to us.
I'm glad.
And it just seems crazy that you're giving back to us after you're the one that...
Well, it goes both ways. You guys, you know, are a big reason why I'm healing the way I am. You know, you guys were the first to put your hands on me and, you know, look at my injuries and assess me, and you took care of me.
I can't thank
you guys enough, and it seems very small to want to come in and say thank you, but
it means everything.
You know, it's a big deal to me and my family. So
honestly, just doing what we do. I mean, but thank you for coming in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there anything, any advice to people that have these kind of events, how to handle them? I'm kind of getting some ideas already. Just stay, keep your priorities straight.
Exactly.
Keep powering through.
Yeah, exactly.
Any other things, though?
Be strong and be thankful for, you know, even though you went through something really tragic, you have to be thankful for how much worse it could have been, mm-hmm. and thankful that it wasn't that much worse, you know, that, you know, I'm walking and mm-hmm. Have been able to move on and get back into my same old routine.
That's great.
And,
well, I know you horseback ride.
Yes.
Any, what's the prognosis, hopeful prognosis on that?
So right now I do all my riding from the ground.
Okay.
It's all ground training now.
Well, how does that work? What do you mean?
Just any training I can do from the ground. Okay. I'm not riding at all. Uh-huh.
You can't get in a buggy?
No.
Oh, all right. Okay.
If sled? I had a buggy, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Hansom cab? No.
Yeah, no. No, I've been fortunate enough to find people to come ride my horses for me, and that's working out really well. So I went from really thinking I need to sell all my horses to I'm never going to ride again to, okay, reality is I will be able to ride again eventually. It's just going to take some time. And, you know, people are helping me get there.
So there's a whole other emotional state that you're not even bringing to this podcast. Just that thought alone, I'm sure, would make people go crazy and scared and frustrated. But it's okay. I mean, it's just something, it's kind of a testament to you to say, oh, well, yeah, there was a point where I realized my passion life I probably wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah.
But I've gotten through that. I think some people, that would shatter them. I mean, really, it's just kind of...
Yeah, you know, I had not looked at it that way.
I know you haven't. Because that's kind of what I'm pointing out.
My priorities are my kids and my family. Right. And I'm still here for my kids and my husband. That's what matters to me. I mean, if I couldn't ride my horses again, that's fine. But I'm still here for my kids.
Engine 18, engine 27, truck 35, battalion 13. That's interesting. Structure response. Structure. Board at
me. All right. Well, with that.
Engine 18, engine 27, truck 35, battalion 13, remain on Saturday fire. Structure response.
Come on, structure.
If I can.
Of course, we're going to go code 3.
All right.
All right. Well, this concludes the interview with Amy Monahan. We're going to go on a structure response because this is how it works. The cycle continues. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, man. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember, we're on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, www.dramedypodcast.com, and your local internet cafe. It's Ken Allen saying, if you got it, then use it.
Well, I don't know what I'm looking for, but I know that I just want to look some more. And I won't be satisfied till there's nothing left that I haven't tried. For some people it's an easy choice, but for me there's a devil and an angel's voice. Well, I don't know what I am looking for, but I know that I just want to look some more. king, now I've lost it all, and I don't feel a thing. I may never grow up, I may never give in, and I blame this world that I live in. I visit hell on a daily basis, and I see the sadness in all your faces. I've got friends who have married and their lives seem complete, and here I am still stumbling down a darkened street. A darkened street. And I act like a child in a